Welcome to the Frihof Institute of Progressive Halakha. I'm Rabbi Mark Wachowski with the 12-minute shiur number 8, Prayer in Translation. Is it Kosher? Part 2, the Megillah. In our shiur number 7, we explored the question of reciting parts of the liturgy in languages other Hebrew, specifically the recitation of the Shema and the Tefillah or Amidah, the fixed prayer traditionally recited 3 times daily. The answer, from the Mishnah, the Talmud, and the major poskim up to the Shulchan Aruch, was that yes, it is permissible to recite these liturgical rubrics in a language that one understands. In this shiur, we focus on a third liturgical act, Mikra Megillah, the recitation of Megillat Esther on Purim. The mitzvah is to hear the Megillah read on that day. The question, can we fulfill that mitzvah by hearing the Megillah read in translation in a language we understand? We begin with Mishnah Megillah, Chapter 2, Mishnah 1, lines 1 through 11 on the source sheet, which you can download at our website. HaKoreh et HaMegillah LeMafreah Lo Yatzah, one who reads the Megillah backwards or textually out of order has not fulfilled the obligation. One who reads it by heart or reads it in a translation in any language has not fulfilled the obligation. But it may be read in a non-Hebrew language to those who do not understand Hebrew. And if the one who does not understand Hebrew hears it read in Hebrew, that person has fulfilled the obligation. A couple of difficulties here. First, we learned that reading or hearing the Megillah in translation has not fulfilled the obligation, but then it may be read in a non-Hebrew language to those who do not understand Hebrew. What gives? Well, the Talmud discusses the problem, and Rabbi Ovadia Mibartanura, the classic commentator on the Mishnayot, summarizes the discussion in the Talmud on lines 15 through 26. One who reads it, the Megillah, in a translation in any language, has not fulfilled the obligation. That is, a Hebrew speaker who reads the Megillah in Aramaic, Targum, and does not understand Aramaic, or in any other language that he does not understand, does not fulfill the obligation. But it may be read in a non-Hebrew language to those who do not understand Hebrew, that is, in a language that they understand, provided that it is written in that language. Otherwise, one would be reading the Megillah by heart. Thus, according to the Mishnah, it is possible for those who don't know Hebrew to fulfill the mitzvah by hearing the Megillah read in translation into their vernacular. The idea, apparently, is that we want people to understand the reading, the story of Esther and Mordechai, and reading in the vernacular would clearly achieve that goal. But this raises a second difficulty with the final portion of the Mishnah. And if the one who does not understand Hebrew hears it read in Hebrew, that person has fulfilled the obligation. Well, how can that be if they don't comprehend what's being read to them? The Talmud in Megillah 18a discusses this, and that discussion is on the source sheet, lines 31 through 46. The Talmud introduces the kushya, how can it be if a person doesn't understand the reading, that is, the non-Hebrew reader hearing the Megillah read in Hebrew? And the answer, mididahava anashim va'amei ha'aretz. That person has the same status as women and the ignorant, who presumably don't have a Hebrew education, don't understand the Hebrew, but still fulfill their obligation by hearing the Megillah read in its original. Along comes Ravina to object to the kushya itself. Matkif la Ravina. Ask yourself, do we understand the Megillah's phrase, ha-chashtalanim b'nei ha-ramachim? Try reading that fast 3 times. Nobody's quite sure of the translation of this phrase. Modern scholars think it refers to swift horses, but it's clear that the rabbis didn't know exactly what it meant. Yet even so, Ravina says, even though we don't understand what those words mean, we fulfill the mitzvah by hearing the reading and the requirement of publicizing the miracle, Pirsume Nisa. The same is true here. The one who doesn't know Hebrew fulfills the mitzvah of hearing the reading and the requirement of publicizing the miracle, by hearing the entire Megillah read in Hebrew, even though that person doesn't understand the meaning of the entire text. The key phrase here is Pirsume Nisa, publicizing the miracle. As Rashi explains in lines 50 through 55, publicizing the miracle means even if they don't understand what they're hearing, they can ask those who do understand, who will explain to them the reading and the story of the miracle. It turns out that while understanding is an important requirement for Mikra Megillah, that understanding doesn't necessarily have to come from the comprehension, the direct comprehension of the words of the text. People who don't know Hebrew can fulfill the mitzvah by hearing the text read in its original. They'll learn the gist of the Esther story and thereby take part in the proclamation of the miracle that is Pirsume Nisa. On the other hand, nothing in this Talmudic discussion questions the permissibility of reading the Megillah in the vernacular for people who don't know Hebrew. And that is the halacha, or at least it was the halacha in the 12th century, as we can see in the Psak by Rambam in lines 58 through 66. But by the early 16th century, things have changed. Take a look at the Shulchan Aruch, lines 70 through 73, where he says, "V'yesh l'machot b'yad ha'korim l'nashim ha'megillah b'lishon la'az." We should protest against those who recite the Megillah for women in a foreign language, even if it is written in that language. What happened? The halacha has now turned on its head. You can do this, but we don't want you to. We're going to stop you from doing it. Obviously, there was a practice in some places for a Megillah written in the vernacular to be read for the benefit of women and, who knows, maybe for men who didn't understand Hebrew. Such was the practice specifically in the community of Zaragoza in Spain. We know this from a teshuvah or a responsum of Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Sheshet, the Rivash, who flourished in the late 14th and early 15th centuries. When he came to Zaragoza and saw them reading the Megillah in Spanish for the women of the community, he urged them to stop doing it. One reason he gave was those very words, Ha'achash Taranim B'nei Haramachim. Now, the Spanish Megillah, to be sure, had a translation for that phrase, but as the Rivash says, who knows that that translation is correct? After all, as we see in the Talmud, even Chazal, the Talmudic sages, admit that they don't know precisely what those words mean. So he says, let's say you read the Megillah in the vernacular. You translate everything correctly into Spanish except that phrase, which you can't translate correctly because we don't know what it means. And that means that when you read this Megillah, you're not reading, wait for it, the ganze Megillah. You're not reading the entire Megillah, and therefore you don't fulfill the mitzvah. What do you do? He says it's better to read Esther in the original, because as the Mishnah tells us, those who don't understand Hebrew can nevertheless fulfill their obligations by reading it, by hearing it read in Hebrew. The Shulchan Aruch here follows Rivash, and Magen Avraham, the classic commentary to Shulchan Aruch Orach Chaim, takes the reasoning one step further. It's on line 76 through 82. Mishum dela yade hala'as shel ha'achash taranim. We should protest against this reading of the Megillah in translation because we don't know the proper translation of that phrase. And if you argue that, okay, let the reader recite that word or phrase in the original Hebrew, with everything else being recited in the vernacular, we would respond that it is forbidden in the first place, in principle, l'chatchila, to recite the Megillah in two languages. Pick one, Hebrew or translation. You can't do translation successfully, so your only real option is to recite it in Hebrew. Now, precisely why it would be forbidden to insert three Hebrew words into a vernacular Megillah, Magen Avraham doesn't explain. But more puzzling is the transformation in the history of this particular halacha. I mean, according to the Talmud, it's possible to fulfill the mitzvah of Megillah by reading the scroll in translation, even if we don't know the precise translation of each and every word in the text. But Rivash and the later poskim say that it is impossible to fulfill the mitzvah, precisely because we don't know the precise translation of each and every word in the text. What we're seeing here may be a discomfort, not with non-Hebrew languages per se, but with translation, which necessarily creates a new text that claims equal status to the original, equal in the sense that, in this case, it would fulfill the mitzvah of Mikra Megillah. We get a hint of this discomfort by going back to Rambam on the issue of reciting Shema in the vernacular. That text begins on line 89. And we'll see the Rambam says, as we reported last time, one may recite the Shema in any language one understands, so long as one is careful to avoid mistakes in that language and follows the grammatical rules of that language as precisely as one follows the grammatical rules of Hebrew. Rambam is obviously concerned that the translation be a precise replication of the original Hebrew. Now along comes Rabbad or Rivad, Rabbi Avraham ben David of Poskier, Rambam's contemporary and critic, who points out in his Hasagah or critical note that this requirement is not mikubal al hadad. It doesn't make sense. Since all other languages are perush, they are commentary on the Hebrew text, and precision is out of place when it comes to commentary. The problem with translation is that it necessarily creates a new and different text. It cannot be a precise replication of the original or source text. It is rather a perush, a commentary on that text. Now, this inexact status of translation doesn't prevent Rambam and Rivad from ruling that it's permissible to recite the Shema in translation. But as we'll see in our next shiur, concerns based upon the nature of translation become a major element of the changing halakha and of the objections that Orthodox rabbis will raise against the reformers in the 19th century. But that's for next time. In the meantime, this has been the 12-minute shiur number 8. Thanks for learning with us.